This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 45, where we're going to discuss Office in Office 365, recorded live September the 5th, 2014.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Well, good morning, AC. How you doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good. How you doing, CJ?
Not too bad at all. Great to talk to you again. I missed being out on last week's episode, so I'm sorry about that. But sounded like you had a great chat with C. Young while I was oof.
We definitely did. I think we had a great C. Young and I had a great chat. We've had a lot of questions about business intelligence come in from all the listeners. And I know that I have not been very well versed in it. However, walking out of that interview with him, I now feel like I have a very strong grasp of exactly like what the landscape looks like, not how to do everything, but at least I know what pieces go to what and where they are within the product and what things don't apply and do apply and stuff. So that was a big piece for me. So at least kind of have like a BI topology roadmap kind of thing.
Right.
So maybe we go into deeper discussions if people want those in future episodes.
Yeah, cool.
So,
oh, that's really good. Yeah. I haven't managed to listen to the whole thing, but I'm gonna finish that off soon.
Yeah. So, well, considering we're only recording this 2 or 3 days after that interview, so
it's
spaced out nice and well, but. Yeah, things have been good.
Anyway, so yeah, what's been going on?
Man, I haven't gotten a whole lot done this week because there was, we had a vacation day. Earlier this week was Labor Day on Monday. Last week was teaching a class in Tampa all week, so I didn't get any work done outside of that. But I guess and then I had a lovely root canal this week, which they gave me the full sedation, man, and it was. I remember it was on Wednesday, and I remember going to bed on Tuesday night.
I remember it was on Wednesday, and I remember the weekend.
Yeah, I know. Well, pretty much. I mean, I remember going to bed on Wednesday night. I remember there was a little bit of stuff that I kind of picked up on Wednesday morning, literally 1 or 2 seconds here and there. I remember I kept lifting my hand up to scratch my nose, and they kept telling me to put my hands down. And then I went back to sleep, and I didn't wake up until 5 o'clock. In the afternoon. So I was,
wow,
it was,
you were out.
Oh man, I was completely out, and it's awesome because now I don't have any more pain in my tooth. I've been dealing with this pain for 2 years. So it's so nice to be able to drink, cold liquids or hot liquids over my tooth and not have this like shivering pain. So,
hey, it's good to be able to drink those cold beers just in time for football season. Man, so
no kidding. Especially without pain. But hey, not to say that I haven't been drinking in 2 years, so I have been.
Oh, that sounds brutal.
I am still a SharePoint developer, so I have been drinking. But I tell you what, man, the cool thing, though, and I hope I'm really curious to hear if our listeners pick up on this, but we did something new for the last episode, and it'll be for this one as well. But so far to date, I've done all the production and mixdown for the podcast, and I found someone by the name, and I might mispronounce his name, but his name is, I think, Rade. In Serbia, who is now doing all of our mixdowns. So we give him all the recorded stuff, and then he generates the MP3 for us. And I thought that the BI episode that came out sounded so much better than the work that I normally did. So I'm hoping that this is the start of a very long and lasting relationship.
Yeah, no, it'll be nice. It'd be nice to be able to have somebody scrub up the episodes and focus on them, and gives you some time back.
Yeah. I mean, it takes, what, an hour to record this stuff and to plan it out. And then it takes us a good 2-ish hours just to produce it. So
yeah,
it's nice. So what you been up to?
So short week this week, obviously, with Labor Day and things. So things are going really well. It's all going gangbusters at work and stuff like that. Lots coming up this year, and we'll have more to talk about sort of at Tech Edge Europe is kind of the time frame that we'll be announcing a whole bunch of new stuff for developers. So stay tuned for that. Mm. Basically, we're on a march towards that as a big milestone where we start talking about a whole bunch of new stuff we got coming. So very exciting, but tons and tons of work to do. So it'll be great to finally be able to get on stage there and talk about it.
Mm, looking forward to seeing it.
But outside of work, I've been blowing off some steam with Elite Dangerous. I think I've spoken about this before.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of currently all in on it.
I would say so. You showed me your setup before we recorded this. I'd say you're definitely all in.
I bought a HOTUS, which stands for hands on throttle and stick, which basically is, you know, left hand on the throttle setup, right hand on a joystick, tons of buttons, lots of gadgetry. It's awesome. I bought this little head tracker thing so I can look around the cockpit. It's just technology rules. Like, it's really cool. So Elite is a 30-year-old game. The first version came out about 30 years ago, almost to the day, actually, 30 years ago. And I wasted months of my life on it. I think I mentioned this in a couple of podcasts ago. And so now they're remaking it, and dear God, it is good. It's true to the original, and it's just glorious. It's the same guy that wrote the original, David Braben, a British guy, and or an English guy, I should say. And yeah, it's really good, but I'm super addicted.
Awesome. That's really cool. Yeah. Your setup, I'm looking forward to coming out there, coming out in your neck of the woods later this year, and hopefully getting a peek at this whole setup. So seeing it firsthand.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Cool.
So on to today's episode. Yeah. I could go on about Elite for weeks.
We do.
So don't get me started.
We do have a podcast, don't we? This is about the cloud, right? There's Elite. Elite's in space, not in the cloud. That's beyond. That's the next thing we're doing in computing.
Yeah, totally. Different galaxy, far, far away. Yeah, so this week's episode, what we thought we'd do is talk about Office. And I know that sounds a little strange, might sound a little strange to some people, but, and you're like, Office, like Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, what the hell has that got to do with the cloud? But it surprisingly has a lot of things to do with the cloud these days. And so I thought it'd be worth us having a chat about Office and what its cloud story is these days. And because I think a lot of people are just not aware of the way Office is delivered and the different options you've got for getting it, the different way it's, you know, the different way you can interact with it and so forth. And so I thought we'd go through that. But why don't we kick off with a couple of other Office-y kind of news items before we get started. One will be huge for Office 365, potential new Office 365 customers. Mm. It was announced at WPC. It's called the Office 365 Fast Track Deployment onboarding center. Have you heard about this?
I only peripheral. I mean, I don't know too much about it.
Yeah, so it was briefly talked about at WPC, and it made some news back then. But basically, Microsoft is getting into the business of helping customers get to Office 365. So where traditionally you would have bought Office 365 from Microsoft or from a reseller. Like, say, GoDaddy is really popular in the SMB space. You would have bought Office 365, and then it would have been up to you or you to go find somebody to help you get there. And that would include typical tasks like configuring your DNS, setting up the accounts, applying the licenses, doing your email migration, or, you know, setting up OneDrive, all of that sort of stuff. And so now the there's a blog post we'll link off to that was announced. It was put up a couple of days ago by the 365 team, basically announcing a little more detail about the onboarding center. So Microsoft's setting up dedicated people around the world, teams of people, I should say, this big effort to sort of one-on-one handhold customers, sort of white glove treatment, get them to, once they've purchased the product, get them onboarded. Mm. So I think we've talked a little bit about sort of like a concierge service in many ways, right? Where, you know, you buy a SaaS product and then somebody will help you get it set up and get onboarded. And that's the idea behind this. Mm. There's going to be the skeptics here who'll be like, well, nobody can help me, you know, move entirely. And there's certain things they do and there's certain things they don't do, right? So their goal is to not migrate your entire SharePoint on-premises environment to Office 365. But what they will help you with specifically is around email migration. Mm. So they help you get it set up, and there's a bunch of services that they offer. But then they'll also help you with email migration, and it'll be delivered by Microsoft people. Mm. So they'll help you get off Exchange Server 2003, Lotus, Domino, Gmail, and IMAP accessible environments. And so they'll help you migrate your mail once you've got set up in 365 to get all your inboxes migrated.
And it's not just migrating from those specific versions and platforms. It's starting at those versions going all the way up to present day. So if I was Exchange Server 2010 on-prem, they're going to help me migrate to there. So they started Exchange Server 2003, and then everything from that point to today, if you're on-prem with those, they'll bring you up. Same with Domino.
Yeah, exactly. So it's delivered remotely. Obviously, people don't come to your house to help you with this, but it's they'll have tools and, you know, assistance to help to get it across the line.
Mm, that's big. That's really big.
Yeah, yeah. It's a huge step, and there's not a lot of like really big SaaS providers that do this.
Right.
It was kind of a little bit, you know, Yammer had a little bit of this with their, with, you know, the customer success managers, where you'd buy Yammer and then they'd assign somebody to help you be successful with Yammer, right? That'd help you with, you know, adoption materials and things like that, that would help you figure out how you're going to roll it out across your organization. And to a degree, it's kind of along those lines, right? It's like, you don't just buy the product and then we, you know, and then Microsoft don't talk to you ever again, unless you have a problem, but we'll help you get there too.
Mm, yeah.
And there's a lot of partners that are obviously looking at this thinking, hey, hold on, but that's what I do. And there's still loads. There's obviously, this is not the whole story, right? There's still a huge partner play here for organizations that need, you know, profile sync and dir sync and all of that and ADFS and all of those things that you have to do before a lot of this stuff is even possible. And so you can also, for those pre-deployment stuff or, you know, those other adoption activities, you can, Microsoft will help with various funds to, for you to go get a partner to help you with those things.
Very cool. That's a very nice onboarding for those people who are interested in moving to 365. And like, yeah, and let's also just to kind of make cards on the table. I know a lot of people that just jump to 365 for one reason, and that's to get out of the Exchange or the email management business. I mean, you get, there is a link and there is a SharePoint piece as well, but God, one of the most obvious things to get to outsource and get off of your management is email.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it works for your business, this is a great offering to make it easier to help you do it. I know when I migrated from one hosted Exchange partner over to 365, it was not easy to do. And I went and got another cloud provider to help me do it. And I did it for both my personal 365 tenant. And then I also did it for back when I was Critical Path Training, I migrated all the mail to 365 for them as well. And it went pretty clean, pretty seamless. I was really surprised it went as seamless as it did. But yeah, this is a nice offering. Very cool.
Yeah, it should help folks. So we'll link off to the blog post up on blogs.office.com and you can read more about it. And there's a couple of links off there to the to the deployment center, and talks through a bunch of, you know, exactly what they'll do and all that stuff.
And then I saw there's another bit of news around the Office Store, right?
Yeah, the Office store.office.com launched, which is a new sort of front end for the Office Store, which is where you go and get apps for Office and apps for SharePoint, you know, like the LinkedIn app for Outlook, for example, and say Nintex Forms and Workflow for SharePoint and those sorts of apps. So we launched a new front end for that, and so it's just cleaner and a bunch easier to find things. There's new categories for finding apps. We put new algorithms around what we show on the homepage and things like that. So you should see fresh stuff each day there. It should be easier to find the apps that you're looking for, and cleaner layout and design. So we've made reviews a bunch easier to look at, things like that. So the visual refresh was one part of it, but we're also launching, we also just launched some new international storefronts. So the way the Office Store works is everybody doesn't see exactly the same stuff, right? So if you come in, and you're set to Russian, right, you'll see a Russian storefront. It's localized. And we'll also show, apps that have been localized as well in Russian, right? So it was, Dutch, Italian, and Russian are the new language support that we added. And so you'll be able to see localized apps in those languages.
As you're explaining this, I wasn't aware that this happened. I see that there was a blog post about it, but I'm about 2 or 3 weeks behind all my blog posts blogs that I follow. Man, this makes it a heck of a lot easier to consume or to browse the store and to see what's available to you. I honestly didn't realize there were this many apps in here.
I think we're up to like 1200 apps or something now.
I was in one category a second ago and it was $3.99. So if you go, you go to the all category, it's 926. So
yeah, there's some apps that are in the store, but are hidden. So they don't show up. For example, there's some caveats, but in total, it's about 1,200.
Mm, pretty cool.
Yeah, the interesting thing for this is that, you know, you're like, eh, you know, I don't mind seeing English apps or what have you. But from our telemetry, we know that if you build an app and you localize it, you get a ton more downloads in those from those regions, right? The uptake of your app is many, many multiples larger than folks that don't localize. And the reason I think that's really important for people building apps is that obviously you want as many downloads as you can, but also more importantly, from a business model side of things, we've got ISVs that are based in the US, but sell in all these different markets. They don't do any marketing in, they have no sales presence, and they've never sold apps in before, but they took the time to localize their app. And now they're seeing, you know, good amount of sales from these regions that they've never had anything to do with. So it's kind of like completely new markets for them and new opportunity to go sell. So that's why localized apps are important to those folks, so that they can get into those new markets and sort of get some traction in them. So it mostly matters for ISVs from a business perspective. And then from an end user perspective, we know that you just get, you know, users like seeing apps in their own language. Obviously, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, obviously.
No, this is cool. I'm seeing some apps here that I had no idea were in here. And I know that these are ones that I'd like to use.
Hey, just a quick shout out, a new app that's pretty cool went live a couple of days ago. It's from a company called Cirrus Path. They make a product called Cirrus Insight, which is the number one app in the Salesforce App Exchange marketplace. And they have for a long time built an app for Gmail that connects to Salesforce, and they just launched their Office 365 version. So we'll it's cirruspath.com/office365 is their sort of website for the app. So if you're a Salesforce customer, you want to check out apps for Office, you can go add the Cirrus Insight app into Outlook, and it'll work across Oa and the web, Oa for iPad, Oa for iPhone, and Outlook on your desktop as well. And it's pretty sweet. It's a nice example of an Outlook app that just launched.
Very cool.
We'll link off to that in the show notes.
Cool.
Hey, cool. So enough banging on about the news. Why don't we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode?
Sounds good. I'm starving. I'm starving. We need to get moving.
Gotta have the meat and three veg. So today we're going to talk a little bit about Office. And I thought this was interesting because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about Office these days. And people still think that you go buy Office in a box from your local Fry's or your local store or whatever. Or for most people, it comes on the PC they buy, right? Mm-hmm. And they never sort of touch it again. And they go buy it from the store or what have you, and they get a disc and they pop it in. And then like 3 years or 4 years later, when they replace their computer, they go buy a new version of Office. But the world of Office, and in particular the desktop bits, like the you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint that you install on your desktops, changed quite a lot. And A, in the way you get it, B, in the way it's sort of updated and maintained over time, and also the way you can buy it as well. So I think the first thing that most people don't realize, even to this day, maybe not our listeners, but lots of people that I talk to, is that you can get Office as part of Office 365, obviously, right? You can get the client applications, you know, the downloadable client apps that run on your desktop that come with certain Office 365 subscriptions. So, for example, Office 365 Personal, which is a SKU you can buy just for yourself. It's one, you get rights to install Office on one PC or one Mac and a tablet, like an iPad, for example. So you get your subscription, it's $6.99 a month, and you can install it on a PC. You can go get Office for the iPad and go sign into it and get full rights to, you know, use Office for the iPad.
You know, I think that is huge, because if you think about it, what does Office normally cost? Like if you buy it like off the shelf at like a Best Buy or Fry's, was it like $400 or $500, right?
It can be anywhere from really like $150 to 300.
Okay. Yeah. So somewhere around there. And it depends, like, if you're education or, you know, whatever, but and that's, you buy it and it's you're only buying that one version. But if you turn around and you buy an Office 365 subscription, so let's say you're just an individual and you want it, $7, new versions have typically in the past, they've come out every 3 years. So let's just say 36 months at $7 a user, that's $252 over the course of 3 years. So, and not only that, if a new version comes out while you're doing that, you still have rights to go through and grab that new version, install it, and start using that new version, right away. And you get a license to it on your tablet as well, on your iPad, on your, whatever. So that's a killer freaking value these days.
Yeah. It's a lot of, some things work on subscription for some people, and other people like to kind of buy the thing in perpetuity. And you can still do that. You could still go buy Office and, pay your couple of $100 or whatever it is. And then get the whole thing in perpetuity. And so you don't have to go subscription if you don't want. But it's kind of a no-brainer, at least to me, that you pay, $6.99 a month or whatever, and you get it forever. You get the latest version. You get it on your iPad or on your tablet. You get it on your phones as well, and you get it on your desktop.
And you also get 1 terabyte of storage, which is big. And then you also get 365. Am I mistaken? I mean, you get like Outlook web access.
So it depends on which SKUs you buy and all that sort of stuff, right? There's a whole raft of different SKUs. There's 365 personal and 365 home. Then there's small business SKUs, 365 small business premium, and mid-sized business. And they all have different things included in them. And then you get the enterprise SKUs, right? So E1, E2, E3, and E4 are the enterprise SKUs that, bigger businesses will use. And Office comes in E3 and E4.
Yeah, but you're talking that if you go with the personal, the home, small business, or the mid-sized business SKUs, I mean, you're talking maxing out at $12.50 a month to get almost everything. And then if you're going to go through and do more like stuff like business stuff where you need like an enterprise license to do more SharePoint, more Link, more like business intelligence stuff, I mean, you're really maxing out at $22 a month. Most people are probably going to fit in that E1, E2 model, E3 being more like a more advanced small business or an enterprise at that E3, which is $20 a month. But I mean, for the most part, you're going to get by with, spending less than $20 a month per user, which is, it's a really, really good value, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Cool. One of the other things people don't realize anymore is that when you go buy an Office product in a store, you no longer get the discs. So you can, because you don't need them anymore. If you buy Office 365 personal, if you go into a Microsoft store or what have you and go buy it, you end up with a card in the middle, in the thing, and you go redeem that online and get your subscription set up. And more and more, I noticed this the other day with a product I ordered off Amazon, and it came and it had a little card in it that said, we no longer ship CDs. And so that you can get the latest version of the software when you go download it. It probably saves them a whole bunch of cost having to put discs in there too.
Absolutely.
So the same goes for Office now. It's mostly just download cards or subscription cards that you go buy and go set yourself up online. I did this for home. So I have a Office 365 home account, a subscription, and so that I can put Office on my PCs here. And so Office 365 home instead of personal, you get 5 users, 5 PCs, and 1 terabyte of storage. So you get to put it on a couple of different machines, and your whole family can use it.
Yep, I did the same thing. That's how my mom and dad have it on theirs. My brother's got it on his machine. My wife's got it on her machine.
Yeah,
I did the same exact thing.
When I set this up at home, I know I work for the Office team, but I was the same as everybody else. I got Office discs. I put them on my PC, and I never updated Office other than the updates that come down monthly or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when I went through and set up Office 365 Home, it was a sweet experience. I didn't realize you sign in, you redeem your token, They've got a little portal there. You can click the links to download the apps and get them installed. And it's pretty straightforward. I was pleasantly surprised. It was pretty sweet.
I was too. I'm just waiting for a refresh of Office for Mac to ship, which they say is supposed to be this fall, but oh my God, I am dying.
I don't think it's just you.
Man, it is just, I saw an article the other day where it says that it's the longest gap ever between two versions of any Office product.
Oh, really?
It was late 2010 when it last shipped.
Wow.
And there's a lot of stuff that's just, I mean, Outlook is flaky. Word and Excel aren't nearly as good. Hmm. I mean, I'm trying to do a lot of the macros that I'd written for my Excel 2013 workbooks. They don't work on there, so I got to fire them from the VM just to sit there and go run a macro.
Hey, well, if it helps, I can tell you that I've seen it, so it exists. Well,
that's great. If they would just be a little more specific of when it's going to ship, I would love to. I mean, I wish it would be. I hope it's like an announcement, like when Yosemite comes out RTM later this fall. But they teased this in, was it March or April? And then it's been radio silent since then. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think there's a lot of people looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, it's the web clients are great, but they're not as good as having when you're offline. They're not as good. So
yeah, no, I agree. But, I agree.
Anyway.
Hey, so that actually brings us to the next point, which is about updates and new versions of things. And you know, so previously in the past, you know, you go download Office or you install off the disks, and then other than the sort of service packs and security fixes that you get through the update system, that's about it, right? And so something that's changing pretty substantially and you know, moving to the cloud is not only are the cloud services updating more frequently, like SharePoint and Exchange and those sorts of things, but so is the Office client, both the web applications and the desktop apps. And so now with Office 365 and the client bits, when you've installed the desktop applications, they will update. You'll get updates from the cloud when they're ready to go, right? So it'll install sort of seamlessly in the background, or you'll you know, and if you're running the apps at the time and they might need to restart, you'll get a little prompt saying, "Hey, you know, there's updates available. You need to, you know, restart Word or whatever for them to take effect." Mm. But it's sort of in constant comms with the cloud, checking for updates and pulling them down. And the way to think about this, or the way we describe it at Microsoft, is we call it ripples versus waves, right? So in the past, we used to say, you know, the 2013 wave of Office products, right? And it'd be this big release, and there'd be this, you know, all new versions of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, Outlook, all of those sorts of things. But now we talk about updates as ripples, you know, where there's much more frequently, but much, much smaller as well, you know, so they're not so disruptive, but there's more of them.
As a consumer, I like that. I like having much more frequent updates to get sent out, as long as those updates are not massive packs that you have to download and install. Like, I mean, there's nothing more frustrating than wanting to sit down and, you know, do a Forza race with your son and turn on Xbox Live. You haven't turned it on in a month, and it's like going, "We got to download 2 terabytes or 2 gigs of 2 terabytes. Jeez, 2 gigs of stuff." And it's like, he's like, "How long is this going to take?" I just kind of look at him. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you should go clean your room before we play.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah. So as a consumer, I like it because I like the fact that, you know, lots of little updates staying current, but I'm not having to worry about getting these big updates kind of coming down and having to, you know, deal with all those. As a developer, I know from the engineering side, you know, I like that as well too, because I'm one of the developers that falls in the camp of, I'm always terrified to update production because I'm afraid to break it.
Yep.
If it's out there and it's working, I'm fine. But if I'm doing lots of little updates and keep doing lots of little shipping and making little tweaks here and there, I have a lot more confidence in the application. Plus, if something breaks, it's usually not an epic break, so it's easy to fix pretty quick. I'm not like a massive data outage or something like that.
Yeah.
Like a great example is like an Office 365, like 2 weeks ago, I think, where there was the top bar, whatever you call it, the suite bar or the Office 365 bar, it changed. And the menu got a little screwed up. For I know a lot of us, the drop down was just all the menu options were all black background, black text.
Huh.
it didn't work at all for me for 2 days, but then out of the blue, it just started working again. It wasn't a caching thing or anything like that, because I killed cache. I did all the developer stuff that you do, but it got fixed right away. And it was that kind of stuff. That's nice, knowing that I'm out of the business having to maintain this stuff.
Yeah.
So as a developer, it's nice to have that kind of, be able to ship those kind of quick updates and not have to wait for 7 months. And knowing that the provider of the product can respond more to what the industry wants and what customer demands are and any kind of issues that are out there, can respond faster with new features and not just security patches for that we've been dealing with for years. So
yeah, this is from a developer point of view, this is kind of a different approach to the way Office has ever been deployed before, right? So in the past, companies used to deploy Office and it used to take them years, and they'd be very thorough and they'd test every single line of business app and every single add-in and every single template and all of that sort of stuff that they'd built with Office. And then they'd wait 3 years for another version of Office. Then they'd rinse and repeat and do the whole thing again. And, you know, I'll be completely frank and honest here. They're struggling with this idea of more updates happening more frequently, because they're still thinking in the old world of every time an Office update comes down, it's this massive big ordeal, right?
Yep.
And now they're saying, hey, but hold on, you can't update Office every month because that means I've got to retest all my apps. And what we're, you know, as Microsoft and with my developer Microsofty hat on, we're taking the opposite approach of saying, look, like, we're trying to get you out of the business of having to do that by making the updates more frequent and smaller. And the churn and change in Office should be a ton small, you know, should not be as disruptive.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is definitely a change in the way people do things. So there's a couple of things that I suggest that people look at if they're developers or if they're companies that are struggling with this change of, you know, sort of streamed updates happening every month. As if you're a business, you can deploy this thing called the Office Telemetry Dashboard, which... in an organization, you push out a group policy through AD to everybody's machines. And basically, Office will log if add-ins start crashing, or if there are problems with macros or templates and things like that. It will log to a log file, and then that goes into a central database. Mm. So it basically logs to a share, and then there's a agent that picks those logs up and stuffs them into a database for you. And then we've got a dashboard that you can launch, and it'll show you, this is a really unknown thing, and most people don't understand that this exists, but you can look through your dashboard of your organization for Office, and you can see what macros people are using, if there are macros that are throwing errors, if there are add-ins that are crashing or throwing errors, and you can see what documents and what templates people are using.
Huh.
So you can see what the most popular templates in your organization are, what the most popular documents are, what macros people are using. So like, if people are adding macros to Word to help them get their job done, you can see you've got 300 people in your organization. They're all using the same macro. They've all bought it individually. You can go back to that company and like do a bulk deal with them or something. I don't know. I'm making this up, right? But that's a use for it.
Is this telemetry dashboard? Is this a new thing?
No. It's been around for a couple of releases.
Oh. I have a friend that he has a business and he makes his living off building add-ins for Outlook.
Right.
And it's interesting hearing you describe this. So I wonder if he's aware of it, because it can. It seems like if you see people building macros for stuff and doing certain thing, automating certain tasks, then maybe there's an opportunity for them to look at it and say, hey, look, there's all this like custom stuff that we're doing. What about if we had an add-in that did this so we could easily roll out to the organization? So,
I totally agree. It's really interesting and not many people know about it. I'll stop there with it, but guys, we'll put a link up about it. But from a dev perspective, it's really interesting because it helps solve this problem of lots of updates coming out for Office. And if you're not, if you don't want to have to test them every time with all of your add-ins, right? So this way, rather than doing all the testing up front, really frequently, you can roll this out and watch for issues and add-ins potentially if you're worried about it, if you're worried about the updates breaking things.
That's cool. I didn't know that was you're right. Not only did customers not be aware of it, I wasn't aware of it until just now.
Yeah, it's pretty unknown thing. So that's all about like the update frequency, but what about actually getting the bits to your machine to begin with? Because this has changed a little bit as well.
Yeah. So this one, what you can go into three, if you subscribe to it and you go to 365, this is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like yeah. Your first, your get it installed experience.
Yeah. So when you get a new account in Office 365, there's a, what's it called? Getting started page that you get taken to in your Azure portal for you as a user. And it kind of walks you through some stuff and saying, go ahead and install the software. And it takes you to a page where you can go, you know, you've got your license and you go grab Office and you pull it down and you install it on your machine. And it shows you the machines where you've activated it. It's nice too. I found this out just recently where I didn't realize that I had it installed on one of our machines. And I was trying to go through and set my son's laptop up, which I keep getting a little bit of flack for it in the house for saying this, but my son has a laptop. I call it the Minecraft machine. it does have Office installed, but it's apparently just a Minecraft laptop.
Oh man, I completely understand.
Well, it gets even better. I got a 5-year-old little girl who also now has my wife's old machine. Sorry, Minecraft machine. That they go through and they sit on Friday afternoons after school, they're allowed to go sit down and play it for a couple hours. Or on the weekend, they're allowed to do it for a little bit too. But when we went in there, I tried to put Office on my son's machine and found that we didn't have any more licenses for it, but it listed the machines. I'm like, we're totally not using it on this machine anymore. So I uninstalled it, removed it, I didn't even uninstall it. I just went to in the web interface. I said, deactivate that license to that machine.
Yeah.
So the next time if we ever fire that machine up and try and use Office to say, you can't use it here, that's fine because we don't use it.
Yeah.
And went there and applied it and installed it for him on the other machine. So it's pretty, it's very slick. It's done the way that you would want it to be done. That's the nice thing about it.
Do you remember the days of when you used to buy Windows or Office, right? And you got a product key in the box when you bought it. And then you'd go install it. And then if you wanted to shift PCs, you could do that a certain number of times and then all hell would break loose and you'd have to either go on the web and talk to somebody or call up the Microsoft support line and ask them to sort of give you more activations for those products, right? And this kind of gets you out of that business of you can deactivate and activate new machines and shift from one to the other much more easily than you have in the past.
Yeah, I like it. I like that with Office. I do that. I have a subscription to Adobe's Creative Cloud, and it's the same way. I can use it on two machines. If I go to install it on another one, I got to go back and either kill it for their option kind of stinks because I have to sign out of one machine to get it to work. But if I can't get to that machine, I have to basically just hit the nuclear option, and it blows everybody away. And then I can relink it up. I don't have to reinstall anything, but it's like the machine that I'm on, I have to re-sign into it. So it hit me once when I was on the road and I had to do that nuclear option kind of a thing. And it really screwed me up because I didn't have an internet connection to go to re-authenticate it. And so it was like, I kind of screwed, but.
Yeah, gotcha. If in the Office case, if you, you have to have it allowed to connect to the internet at least once every 30 days.
Yep.
Or it'll go into what we call reduced functionality mode, which doesn't mean that you can't use it. It's just some things will turn off.
Yeah.
Basically bottom line. Hey, so one more thing before we wrap up on the activation and deactivation thing. So when you go install Office, it's not like the old days where you'd have to download a 4 gig install or a 3 gig install or whatever it happened to be. It'll stream the bits from the cloud, right? And so it uses this application virtualization technology that Microsoft bought a company called Softricity years and years and years ago, back in 2006, that did this app virtualization stuff, App V. And it's it has its history in that sort of technology. And so now when you go install Office from Office 365, when you, that first run experience and you click, you know, install Office, you actually get Office in the matter of, you know, you can start using it within a few minutes. It's not like wait an hour for it to download, then start the install, and then maybe, you know, 10 minutes later or whatever you've got Office. It's like you click the button, you it fires up a little small window that pops up, and you click next a couple of times and boom, you're in office. And it takes a matter of a few minutes as opposed to, maybe an hour or so.
Yeah, you can start being productive right away. Kind of like how it works with the Kindle, right? You say, I want to go buy a book. It doesn't grab the whole book at once. It starts streaming it, and you can start reading it right away.
Exactly, yeah. Same thing with Office. You could start using the apps, and then in the background, it's finishing off the install.
Very cool.
Sweet. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Makes updates easier as well. It's all virtualized and stuff like that. Not in like a virtual machine, but like a little sandbox for the apps. So that's how that all works behind the scenes. Hey, so let's wrap up. We've talked long enough about the stuff. Talked a little bit about some Office 365 news with fast track deployment. We'll link to in the show notes, the Office Store updates, and then the sort of new world of the Office client applications and how it's kind of not like the old days of getting DVDs in a box or having to download the whole shoot and match from Microsoft and then activating it and things. The new subscription model, the new ways of purchasing it, the way activation and deactivation works across different PCs and things. And so, the world of Office on the desktop and Office on the tablets and so forth has changed a lot recently. And so I hope folks have learned a little bit about sort of the way modern Office works these days. It's a completely different universe than Office from, 15 years ago, when I think, you had like 30 floppy disks and all of that stuff.
Those of us on OS X still kind of feel like that. We're still waiting for an update to get current.
Hey, count yourself lucky. You haven't had to do an update in years.
Oh, come on now.
I'm only kidding. I am very much cool. Looking forward to our Mac users feeling the love. So.
Oh, no, you're not.
No, dude, seriously, I am. I'm down with that. If you want to, wrap yourself up and bubble wrap and throw yourself against a padded wall, go for it.
Here we go. We better stop this change right now.
I'm just taking a dig.
it's been a good show.
All right, yeah, thanks AC.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.